Hello everyone, I'm Susanne Schlepost, researcher at Institut für Mittelstandsforschung in Bonn. Today we talk about the difficult conditions under which entrepreneurs run their businesses. That is, currently we are living in a time of multiple crises that make the environment challenging for entrepreneurs. These challenges pile up and follow each other at an ever faster pace. We additionally talk about the framework conditions that entrepreneurs need to cope with their current situation. To find solutions, we called on renowned researchers from all over Europe to present their research results at the International Roundtable on SMEs. Professor Welter, you are the president of Institut für Mittelstandsforschung Bonn and professor at the University of Siegen. What do you think of the current EU SME strategy launched by the European Commission? Does it support SMEs?
In the Institute, a few weeks ago, we looked at the SME relief package, which had been published by the European Commission in September. And what we see there is, again, a focus on short-term relief measures. We also see a pronounced focus on strengthening the long-term competitiveness and resilience of SME, which kind of contradicts the focus on short-term relief packages. And we see, which actually fits together with what the German government is trying to achieve, to promote a fair and SME-friendly business environment. And I think that is becoming way more urgent nowadays, because with the climate neutrality aim, what we tend to do is adding more regulatory burdens, or let's say more regulations, which could become regulatory burdens, to the table. What's positive with this relief package is basically that we see goals in there that are suitable to support small businesses, proposals for simplifying taxes, for better regulation, digital regulation, improving access to finance, and support throughout the whole life cycle. That is to be applauded. That is good. Negative is this focus on sometimes very detailed, very small scale measures, and that these, let's say, relief measures are not temporarily right from the beginning. So that basically, because what could happen is that they become permanent over time.
Mr. Schneider, you are also working at IFM Bonn. In one of your recent studies, you analyzed the barriers that SMEs face in public tenders. What results did you come to?
When an SME is even interested in a public procurement tender, they have to look at suitable offers. And we first see that they are unaware of public tenders. They don't even know that they exist. In step two, when they look at the requirements they have to take, they also find barriers, which is when the specification of the services is too detailed, they don't find any scope for innovation. The time frame for the provision of the services is too narrow.
What challenges do SMEs face in the next step?
SMEs find it to be very hard to compile all the documents. They say it's a very high effort because documents are often not uniform. The language is unclear. It's a very legal lingo. They sometimes do not understand. There's a lack of contact options for questions. And also the platforms are not always the same and are non-uniform.
What could be done to improve the situation of SMEs?
In the first step, we see, for example, a centralized free online platform would be useful. A proactive approach by the contracting authorities would help. When it comes to the second step, examination of the requirements, it would be helpful to examine special regulations, for example, for innovative companies, to check whether the reference and certificates can also be fulfilled by small companies. Or the use of functional tenders, for example, which are not pre-described and can be used more freely.
And what could be done to improve the situation of SMEs in the steps 3 and 4?
In the third step, we see that pre-qualification databases and the increased use of them would help. the forward digitalization and implementing a once-only principle is good when it comes to compiling the documents and creating and better training of SMEs when it comes to participating would also be a step in part three. A revision of regulations on late payments as it is introduced on European level would be good. A use of dynamic purchased systems like it is used, for example, in Rotterdam could help the contracting authorities to reduce work, and the provision of a feedback can be helpful.
Dr. Peter Bexier from Zira Consulting, located in the Netherlands. You and Professor Wittberg from the Fachhochschule des Mittelstands in Bielefeld apply a new approach to calculate and visualize the true bureaucratic burden of small and medium-sized companies in the Netherlands. Could you please explain how your method works?
The idea of the project we had is not to find out how bad it actually is. The thing is, we wanted to know what is the difference between different sectors, why is there a difference, what can we learn from that, also from the perspective of the indicator companies. And on the other side, we wanted to know, of course, what the regulatory burden is about, on the quantitative way, in cost, and but also in a qualitative way, how do they experience, what hindrances do they have. But the most important thing is, and as mentioned, I was developing the standard cost model 20 years ago already. The idea was not just to measure. The idea is to find solutions, solutions to problems for SMEs. So everything we do in this project is focusing where can we find the buttons to push to reduce the burdens on a quantitative way or to improve it for the better regulation we want to improve. So actually, that's the outcome of the project. We always say we don't want a model and a methodology just to know what the problem is. We want to find out where do we find solutions. So keep that in mind when I'm telling the story about the six projects. So to give you a slight idea about the projects we had in, actually the sectors, we had six sectors. And actually for these sectors, we found out we were listing what are the obligations in the regulation. And then it's very interesting to see that a lot of these obligations are actually general obligations, and all companies do have to comply with that. Keep in mind that all these companies, they do have employees. So that was one of the basic things. We had indicator companies, and we identified indicator companies as having personnel from a certain account. And we found out then the different sectors and focused on that part. So the general obligations is, of course, a lot of obligations with by having employees, because they all are the same. Then you also have certain sector-specific obligations in the project, of course, because a hairdresser has not a very a lot of sector-specific obligations. They might work with some hazardous materials and substances. But from a hotel perspective, you see a lot of differences. And that's why we also choose in Germany the hotel with a cafe and a restaurant and also hotelier. So then you have all the obligations in place. So these are actually a very important indicator company, because they a lot of things come together over there. And what you see is that there are sector-specific obligations. So that makes this project also interesting. All solutions we found on the level of the general obligations, they will impact all SMEs, and all specific sector obligations will have an effect on the sector itself. And also a little bit broader, because if they come in place for other sectors, you still have a solution for them.
What solutions do you recommend, Dr. Bex?
There are six things I want to mention. First of all, we've seen in the project that SMEs suffer more from regulatory burden than larger companies. We can see that within the project, we had some larger SMEs and some smaller SMEs, and even within them, we can see those differences. Regulatory burden increases when they have to depend on third parties. Keep that in mind, because the accountants, but also some solicitors, they make business of regulation, and that costs money. So be aware of that. It's a business model. Then combination of regulatory cost and workability, we have seen that stimulating creativity to come up with solutions. What can we do? Can we distinguish between SMEs and larger companies as well? And on the other side, we can also make it much more, the monitoring much more understandable, because everybody can see the company, everybody can see where the impact is, what's the effect, and how it works. We can put it on a website and we can show what the impact of regulatory burdens is, but also what we can do to monitor that and reduce it. Also good to mention, for the governments in place, 30 to about 50% of the obligations do not cause any burdens. It's good it's there. That's also very good to know. We need regulations.
We now come to another important subject, the labor market and migration. Why is it interesting for migrant women to become self-employed, Professor Günther? You and your team investigated this question at the WHU Otto Beisert School of Management in Valenda near Koblenz.
And as we know from the entrepreneurship literature, yes, being self-employed might offer a lot of opportunities. And that's also true for migrant women. But the picture is not that clear, because on the one hand, there might be additional opportunities in additional markets that these individuals could address. But on the other side, female migrants might also be subject to stigmatization. They may end up as necessity entrepreneurs. And as we also heard, they might be particularly strongly affected by a limited access to finance.
So what exactly does this mean for income and life satisfaction?
So what do we mean by that? So in terms of income, there is a penalty for migrants. In terms of lower income, there is a penalty of being a woman. And there is this additional factor that we are specifically interested in. When these two characteristics come together, so being a migrant and a woman at the same time, you have an additional penalty in your income, which amounts to about 7%. In terms of life satisfaction, we again have a specific effect for being a migrant. We have a specific effect, a reducing effect for being a woman. And then there is this extra effect when these two characteristics intersect, so being a woman and being a migrant, that reduces your life satisfaction even further by another 10%. So penalties all over the place. When we then looked into the two different subsamples, so instead of looking in just at migrants and women and their intersection, we also had a look at how does that situation look like for migrant women who are employed as compared to those who are self-employed. Because remember, we wanted to understand whether being self-employed, becoming an entrepreneur, might be a solution to escape these discrimination effects that I just explained. And indeed, what we find is that self-employed migrant women are better off than their employed migrant counterparts. So what we actually find is the additional factor that I talked about of being a migrant and a woman of about 7%, that additional penalty does not exist anymore when migrant women are self-employed. So they actually fare better. And we see that for the income penalty, but we also see that for the life satisfaction penalty. So in general, what we could say is that self-employed migrant women only suffer from the discrimination that they would suffer from anyways because they are a migrant or a woman, but there is not this extra effect that they have to suffer from. So self-employment allows them to escape that part of the discrimination in the labor market.
The COVID-19 pandemic has had a profound impact on entrepreneurs. Professor Rouse, you are a researcher at the Manchester Metropolitan University in the UK, and you analysed the pandemic situation in the UK. What did you find out?
On March 26, 2020, a week after announcing a job retention scheme, a furlough scheme for the employed, we waited for a week with bated breath to see whether there would be any sort of provision for the self-employed. And the Chancellor, the now Prime Minister, announced the Self-Employment Income Support Scheme. And this is really quite a generous scheme for those who are eligible. So we didn't know at that time, but it ended up having five waves. And essentially, the self-employed received up to 80% of their income, up to an earnings threshold through the COVID period. The rules changed variously in different waves of the scheme, but that's the basic principle. People earning over £50,000 from any source of income were excluded from the scheme. But the established self-employed were included in this scheme. They were also allowed to keep trading. And we were pleased about that because we advised early on that in order to innovate, there was no good in making all of these businesses retrench. But equally, it posed the risk of overcompensating some businesses, and rules became more stringent in later waves to try to manage that and get people to declare that they were definitely suffering from a reduced income in order to receive the benefit.
What did this mean for the self-employed?
Well, we estimated that in the first round of the report of the self-employment income support scheme, whilst 3.5 million self-employed were included, around 880,000 were excluded. And these exclusions were to do with eligibility rules. So we don't really have a reliable way for the self-employed to declare their self-employment from their nascent period through into early trading in the UK. And the government chose to use the cutoff of whether or not you had submitted a self-assessment, that's a tax return form, in the period and the tax year that was in the year prior to COVID. So if you were trading up to April 2019, so more or less a year before the scheme was developed, if you started your business in that next year, or if you'd started your business even previous to that, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but hadn't come into profit until the last year before COVID, you were excluded from the scheme. In addition, the government chose to exclude people for whom self-employment is a second job, where they got the minority of their income from self-employment. And because of this tax form issue, that also meant that they excluded people for whom self-employment had been a second job up to April 2019, but for whom businesses had grown and it had become their main job during the last year. They were also excluded from the scheme. In addition, these same workers were largely excluded from claiming any sort of sick pay if they had COVID or if they were self-isolating. So we had this situation where we had a majority of self-employed who were well protected, but a large number of self-employed who were excluded.
Mrs. Bisareva, you are policy analyst at the OECD Center for Entrepreneurship, SMEs, Regions and Cities in Paris in France. What can you add from the OECD's perspective?
In this multi-crisis environment and uncertainty, entrepreneurs are just tired. And it's the issue of well-being and the fact that, you know, a lot of these businesses, entrepreneurs, business owners have really had to cope with increased anxiety and insecurity in this environment is something that has been rather overlooked. And that has also, you know, come into policy focus now internationally. There is a couple of countries that have been pushing the agenda, New Zealand, France, a little bit also more recently. And what we try to do from an OECD perspective is to say, okay, there is really a need when we think about SME policy to take a people-centered approach. And what does people-centered approach mean? It means essentially that we have to also have more granular data, more granular information on the different needs of the very heterogeneous, you know, population of small and medium-sized enterprises. And so this is an agenda that we're trying to push forward. And I mean, one angle that we've taken in more recent work is to sort of take a systemic perspective, and more specifically this the perspective of networks, and to understand, you know, because SMEs, they rely much more on than larger firms on their on connecting to different actors in their ecosystem. They need, you know, networks to understand regulations, but also to purchase certain services that they do not want to internalize for simple cost reasons, but also to innovate. There is no SME that doesn't innovate in collaboration with other actors, basically. Networks matter for trade. So there is different policy approaches that sort of favor these connections, and that matter tremendously for small businesses in the current context. So this is something that we've been looking at and trying to understand.
So thank you all for your interesting contributions. We look forward to hearing more about your research findings on SMEs and entrepreneurship in future podcasts of IFM Bonn. If you're interested in further research of Institut für Mittelstandsforschung Bonn, please visit our website www.ifm-bonn.org.